How did this affect your own non-protocol decision-making? When you saw the data, did it have any effect on what you were doing in your practice?
I mean, to be honest, in my clinical practice, I've decided in both ways. I've treated patients with bevacizumab beyond progression, and I've stopped bevacizumab upon progression. And what I did outside of a clinical trial, I kind of individualized therapy based on what I saw in patients, the effect of therapy on patients in first-line setting. For instance, if a patient had FOLFOX bevacizumab at frontline therapy, which a lot of our patients receive right now in clinical practice, I routinely stop oxaliplatin after about 4 months of therapy and continue and try to maintain the response we have achieved with 5-FU bevacizumab. And in some patients, it works quite well, and you see the tumor stabilized for over a year, year and a half, whatever, as long as we've had experience with bevacizumab. And then you see this slow creeping up progression of metastasis, but it's never a kind of a breakthrough rapid progression that would give you the idea that this is a completely useless therapy. And in those patients, I have continued bevacizumab beyond progression. The other patients were, you start with a bevacizumab-containing regimen, and they progress right away. I don't think bevacizumab plays a role in second-line therapy in these patients.
Were you able to look in the BRIGHT patients and see what fraction of them had had prior responses and whether or not, you know, maybe there was a big imbalance? And
yeah, we did look at that, and there was no imbalance, whether patients had, let's say, partial or complete response, clinical complete response on therapy in first line, and were then continued or not. This is one of the factors we test in the multivariate analysis, and this did not influence the decision whether or not physicians continued bevacizumab.